Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome back to Mallory's Weird World Adventures, the podcast. I'm your host, Mallory, and I'm here to show you just how weird this world of ours really is. For those who are joining us for the first time, Weird World Adventures is a brand with a focus on travel overall, though our specialty lies in featuring the strangest and most unusual places around the world. We highlight myths, legends, belief systems, and weird people living weird lives in a celebratory way. As a proud weirdo myself, I'm happy to see the brand come to life. Watch Weird World Adventures on Amazon Prime, our TV show, or visit Mallory's Adventures, M-A-L-O-R-I-E-S, adventures.com for more. Follow us on Instagram at Mallory's Adventures, on Facebook at Weird World Adventures, and on TikTok at Mallory's Adventures. As your guide and host, I am a board member in the Washington, D.C. chapter of the Explorers Club, and I am a journalist with a specialty in mythology, folklore, and the occult. Currently, I'm on the road filming Weird World Adventures Season 2, which will be coming to Amazon Prime in the fall, but you can watch Weird World Adventures Season 1 on Amazon Prime now. And in this episode, we're going to continue our coverage of the fairy tale route through Germany. The fairy tale route is celebrating its 50th anniversary, so we are going to highlight that. So last episode, we talked about starting the fairy tale trail in Hanau, which is where the Brothers Grimm were born, and then going to Steinau, which is really where they grew up and what provided a lot of the inspiration for their tales. The next stop I made on the fairy tale route is Alsfeld. So this is what the tourism board kind of wrote about Alsfeld, so you get an idea of why it's included in the tour. And I'll talk about some of the experiences we had specifically. Make an excursion into the city of fairy tales and half-timbered buildings to the world-renowned city hall. Preservation, maintenance, refurbishment, this is the motto of Alsfeld. More than 400 half-timbered houses from 7 centuries make the passage through the old town into a storybook tale and exciting adventures, annually drawing into its spell far more than 100,000 friends of fairy tales, as well as holiday tourists and visitors. So what makes Alsfeld specifically special to the Brothers Grimm and that world is that supposedly, and we talked about this last time a bit, Little Red Riding Hood plays a special role in Alsfeld. It is said that the Brothers Grimm were inspired by the traditional costume of Schwalm with its red cap. And so that's kind of the region that Alsfeld is in. So there are a village of people, they said, that are in that area that wear the red cap, the little girls do, when they're young. And part of that costume was the inspiration for Little Red Riding Hood, who, as I mentioned in the last episode, they call Little Red Cap in Germany. So that makes sense because she's actually wearing a red cap as a part of that outfit and not the full Red Riding Hood and cloak. And again, one of the museum curators was very confused that we called her Little Red Riding Hood and couldn't understand why in the States, when in Germany she wears a red cap because she's from this area of Schwalm and that's what they wear. So because of that, they associate kind of their claim to fame to the fairy tale route in Alsfeld with Little Red Riding Hood. And there's also this cute little fairy tale house that's there that's one of these traditional, you know, German houses. And it was made to look like the fairy tale house. They actually built it and put it there because the view from the city hall was then going to a parking lot after some construction happened, and that won't do. We can't have these nice, beautiful, rich buildings in the city hall overlooking a parking lot. That's crazy. So what can we put here that looks nice and aesthetic? And they chose the fairy tale house to celebrate the Brothers Grimm. Now, Alsfeld, I have to say, is gorgeous. It is absolutely a storybook style location. When you get into that city center right away, the The buildings are all authentic, minus, I believe he said, two of them. So Alsfeld was also not destroyed during the war. It has these traditional houses that are authentic to the time, and they are just stunning. There are different colors from different time periods, but it's all that dark wood with the white clay put around it. And their city hall is really unique looking. You'll have to Google Alsfeld City Hall for the pictures. The building is unbelievably beautiful, and it is made out of, the bottom is made out of stone. So you kind of see the stone arches. It has arches underneath so carriages could rest underneath of it. And then the traditional style German building is built on top, and it has four towers, like spires, because the spires represented power. And the more that you had of these like spire-like towers, the more power that you had. So they put four on this building to show people that they rule the town here. This is the town hall, and this is where the power is. So there's kind of that little political statement right there in the actual building. It's the only one I've really seen like it. It's very interesting in the way that it looks. And it's interesting to look at the houses throughout all of these old cities, because this was the case in Alsfeld, and it was also the case in Marburg, where decency laws, we've talked about decency laws on Weird World Adventures before, and if you don't know what they are, if you missed that episode, I'll recap very quickly that decency laws used to be put in place to tell society that certain levels of class could wear certain things and others couldn't, or could buy certain things and others couldn't. There were things that rich nobles and people of strong birth could do that the regular person could not. And there were laws put in place so you couldn't break them. So that would define what you wear, what you eat, what you, you know, ride, and where you live. And specifically, there is there's a saying in Germany, which I've heard it in the United States too, which is rich as stone. And the reason that rich as stone is a saying is because back in medieval times, when they had decency laws, you were not allowed to build a house out of stone unless you were rich and had money. But it was more than that. Some places were said that, you know, it's just that was how people knew you had money. But I think that what it actually breaks down to is, because there it was in Marburg, a decency law thing, was decency laws. So if you were royalty or a member of the government or the church, you were allowed to build out of stone. So important people for the town, which would be the officials, the church, and then obviously any form of royalty or high nobility, you were allowed to build your house out of stone. So you would, just to show people that you were important. Whereas if you were not any of those things, so the average person, even some of the lower ranking nobility members and obviously poor people, you couldn't build your house out of stone. It had to be built out of, you know, I guess the clay at the time that everyone else built their houses out of, and wood. And you can tell on some of the houses, you know, well, this person was rich because it was made out of stone. And there was a very rich street in this neighborhood, specifically down one of the streets of Alsfeld, where there's this stone house next to a not stone house. And they were clearly in a contest of like, well, my house is going to be better than yours. But the person on the right hand side of the two houses couldn't use stone because he was not of noble descent. He was, you know, I think a merchant or someone that made a lot of money, who became very wealthy, but was not of the higher class. So he made his house look as beautiful and elaborate as possible, as much as he could, which would mean rich paints, beautiful designs, but he couldn't use stone. So the guy next door, who was rich and was of, you know, the right birth and could use the stone, built the stone with his house. His house had a stone base to it, and he had renovated it to include that, to one up the, you know, the person next to him, to show him, well, I'm more important than you, and I'm rich, and this will not do, and my house is better than your house. So there's a lot of politics and just stories being told in the structure of the houses, which is quite interesting. Something else of note from local myths and legends and tales, which, you know, I just love. There is a well in Alsfeld that has a little stork over it, because that was where parents used to tell their children, well, this is where the stork comes from. This is the area of the well that the stork comes from to bring the babies to people in the town. So back when they would discuss storks, they had a well that was the stork well in Alsfeld that they told their children about. So that was a fun little just myth and nod to the children there specifically. Then the fairy tale house. So the fairy tale house they built in Alsfeld is very cute. It is a nice little nod to the most famous fairy tales from the Brothers Grimm, which is also interesting because I noticed in my time throughout the trail so far that there are many stories. I mean, obviously there was over 200, but there are many that are very famous here in Germany that we don't know in the States, that we don't tell, ones that weren't in our books or that we just overlooked because they weren't popular. So there are the classics that you're always going to know, like Snow White and, you know, Rapunzel and Cinderella and Hansel and Gretel, but there is many others that I didn't know about that they talk about all the time in Germany that had a footprint everywhere here. And I couldn't even tell you the English name of them. They would say it in German and I'm like, and they tell me the story. Well, I don't know that one. And this fairy tale house has like figures, almost life-size figures, of dolls of the different famous stories, recreating them. So it's interactive. It's cute for kids to come in and just kind of see the different stories. And, oh, I know this one. I know this one. Positioned throughout it. And on the second floor of the house, there's this just charming, very classical looking room, the way that, you know, the classic German architecture is. And it's set up to look like a reading room where someone can read to children in it. And it's very pretty. And then it actually has a patch of the wall taken off. So they removed some of the exterior of it to show you what the interior of those traditional walls look like. So that was very interesting too. I thought that was, it's a bunch of woods, a wooden frame that's like interwoven between itself within clay. And it was a formula in order to build that. They mixed the clay with animal fur and straw to make it kind of stick and kind of insulate, and use different types of clay to pack it in. So it was a very interesting formula to it that he told me all about, which I thought was fascinating, my guide there. And he was even saying to maintain it, it's difficult. It doesn't maintain well. So there are techniques like putting oil on the wood. And I think he said some kind of like powder on the actual white clay. There's things that you can do to help preserve them and make them better so that they don't rot over time. And then up on the third floor, they have a huge collection of these, I want to say like puppet boxes. They're little dollhouses kind of, but they're older than dollhouses. It's the single square like theater space where people would build the furniture of a house and put the little dolls inside and make different scenes and vignettes, because back before television, that's how we amused ourselves. And there's some from the 1800s into the 1900s, throughout the decades. And it's interesting to see, well, I can tell this one's from the 1940s because the aesthetic of it looks like this, where this one's clearly from the 1800s. So it was like very slice of life of, this is what we expect life to look like at this time period, because it was made during this time period. And there's some of, you know, stores, and it was interesting. And again, as someone that studies anthropology, I can't get offended by the way things that used to be, but it is jarring to kind of hear that, you know, this was an activity that little boys were taught to make these for their sisters, because it would get you in with tools and you would learn tools and how to put this together. And then they were good play sets for young girls because it taught them how to make house. And it got them interested in keeping the home and, you know, quote unquote feminine traits, which obviously is very controversial today, but this was just a byproduct of the past. And from there, we admired more of the beautiful architecture, which it's really just known for, before I had to get back in the car and continue on my journey around Germany to Marburg. Now, Marburg is a bigger city than some of the other places that I've been to, not that it's exactly a large city by any means, but its footprint in the fairy tale trail is very secure, because this is where the Brothers Grimm lived for a short time while they studied law school. So Marburg is a university town. There's university spread throughout it, and the Brothers Grimm studied there in Marburg, and specifically law. They studied law for a couple of years before they realized it was miserable and not something they wanted to do, and therefore they quit. And it sounds like they weren't too terribly fond of Marburg, because there are so many hills, and they made comments about there being so many hills and it being so bizarre with the hills that people were coming into their houses from the second story or from the roofs. And there were a couple of houses that were on their path from, you could see the house in which they used to live there while they were studying, which it was just somewhere that someone lived, but you can see it from a hillside. And it's not the original house, because a lot of the town was, you know, destroyed and got rebuilt. So, but you can see where it was. And then there are two original houses that are still there that they had to walk past every day that, in fact, are on a hillside. And you do enter from the top floor of the house and go down in. It's very bizarre, for like on a bridge from the side of the hill. So they had commented on that. So that was there in the time that they were there. And as you walk around through Marburg, you will see the stories. They have art installations here as well on different Brothers Grimm stories. There was one about seven goats and a wolf that taught children not to let strangers into their house. And I've never heard that one before, but that was one of the ones that they had on display. And then there was, first of all, just the architecture in the main city center here for this one as well, and the old town center is just so classically Germany and very storybook, and how you would expect things to look from the Brothers Grimm in that world. And then when you get to the city hall and the main market square, there was this very funny little tale about the man who ran this town as well. He had, I guess, some issues, and when they built the city hall, they were going to build it out of stone because it was something that was for the people, and it was, you know, the city hall. And there was just a loophole around, okay, well, it's gonna be built out of stone because it's for the people and it's a gift and it's a nice thing to do. And the man who ran the town, who lived in the palace, because he would run the city from the palace there, the city hall was in direct line of sight from the palace. The palace was obviously just up and much higher from it, and he could see that they were building it out of stone and took great offense to that because, you know, the people don't get to build out of stone. What's this nonsense? And they basically, you know, protested that, why is this a problem? And he's like, fine, you can build it out of stone if you build the door smaller. So they built the door to be much smaller and put a sigil, his sigil, which would be the lion, with very specific scenes and different things depicted above it, above the door. So give an homage to me above the door,
and make the door extra small so when people go in, they have to duck and they're bowing below my sigil. And then I'll let you make it out of stone. So he had some pride issues there. And they agreed to it. But then kind of as a FU to this guy for being such an asshole about not letting them build the city hall for the people out of stone, which he inevitably did with this, you know, stipulation, they had the art installation put in the way he wanted, except the lion looks very, very sad and kind of like a monkey. So they kind of said F you to him by making that lion look very monkey-like. And you might be wondering, well, gee, how can a monkey look like a lion? And it can. It can. I saw it firsthand. That lion sure does look like a monkey. So that was a political statement there, which was pretty funny. And then aside from the houses in the hills that they had to pass to go to their studies every day, the Brothers Grimm, and, you know, the fact that they used to live right there and walk up the hill, which they hated, to get to their studies. There was this winding, twisting road right in that area that took you to the palace. And the palace is beautiful. It's been renovated and restored and expanded on over the years, but it's still that old original shape and architecture. It's very pretty. It's made of stone. And it's up on top of this grand hill. And you can get there from stairs, but there is this winding, twisting road instead that is shaped quite strangely, because back then when carriages were going down it, you didn't want the carriage to run away. So the stones are kind of structured in a way where they kind of stick up and out a little bit. So it's interesting to walk on it. But this winding, twisting path, clearly, my guide said this, and you can just see it, was the inspiration for Cinderella. And their version of Cinderella, she runs from the prince three times, and she runs away from him from the palace. And it's just the perfect setup, this winding, twisting road away from the palace with these weird stair-like, you know, stones kind of put through it. It's very Cinderella. You can see, well, this was the inspiration for that part of this famous tale. The one, you know, they made that tale famous, and this was kind of the footprint for it. Excuse my my little nod there. The footprint. And so because of that, one of the art installations is Cinderella's shoe right there at the palace. They have a big shoe installation. And they also have a mirror, the witch's magic mirror on the wall, up that way as well. But it was a beautiful sight to see the palace and to get to see all the beautiful views from the top up there, because you can see the whole city clearly from the palace. It's a great defensive part, like, place. That was a good place to put that palace. And then you can run down the twisting, winding road like your Cinderella running away from your prince. And it was very exciting to get to see that inspiration that likely added those elements into that very, 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 very famous story. They also have their own martyr princess there. Elizabeth the Holy One is what they call her. And she was the only real, I guess, royalty, nobility that cared about the people. And so she left this just astounding impact on that town, and they still talk about her today, because she was cast out from where she was with her royal family because she cared too much about the people, and they realized that that was dangerous. So they sent her away to Marburg to live in the palace there, and she created a hospital where everyday normal people could go and get help when they were sick, which was unheard of at the time, and really left a footprint there, and then would bring bread to the poor, which was also not allowed. There were rules against bringing bread to the poor, so she would sneak it and bring it down and give them food, and kind of took care of the sick and the, you know, the people that couldn't take care of themselves. So she became this martyr and known as Elizabeth the Holy One in Marburg, and she has a huge lasting impact there. And she died at the age of 24. So, I mean, she had lived a very short and powerful life helping people, and it just has such an impact in Marburg. So to hear this guide, who was a girl around my age, you know, telling me this tale and the passion she had in speaking about her, it was quite wonderful. And it reminded me very much of parallels to Evita, because the people there just care so much about her, and because she cared about, you know, the common everyday person. And that ends my adventure in Marburg. My next stop was Kassel, which we'll talk about in the next episode of the podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it so far. Again, please remember to watch Weird World Adventures on Amazon Prime and follow us everywhere at Weird World Adventures, or visit Mallory'sAdventures.com. And until next time, everybody, make sure you join me as I continue down the fairy tale route. Until then, stay weird.